Chapter 2. Of Colchester Water, the shore is full of shoals and sands, with some deep channels between, all which are so full of fish, that not only the barking fishing smacks come hither to fish, but the whole shore is full of small fisher boats in very great numbers, belonging to the villages and towns on the coast, who come in every tide with what they take, and selling the smaller fish in the country, send the best and largest away upon horses, which go night and day to London market. N.B. I am the more particular in my remarks on this place, because in the course of my travels the reader will meet with the like in almost every place of note through the whole island, where it will be seen how this whole kingdom, as well the people as the land, and even the sea, in every part of it, are employed to furnish something, and I may add, the best of everything, to supply the city of London with provisions. I mean by provisions, corn, flesh, fish, butter, cheese, salt, fuel, timber, etc. and clothes also, with everything necessary for building, and furniture for their own use or for trade, of all which in their order. On this shore also are taken the best and nicest, though not the largest, oysters in England. The spot from whence they have their common appellation is a little bank called Wheelfleet, scarce to be called an island, in the mouth of the river Crouch, now called Crooksia Water. But the chief place, where the said oysters are now had, is from Wivento and the shores adjacent, whither they are brought by the fishermen, who take them at the mouth of, that they call Colchester Water, and about the sand they call the Spits, and carry them up to Wivento, where they are laid in beds or pits on the shore to feed, as they call it, and then being barreled up and carried to Colchester, which is but 3 miles off, they are sent to London by land, and are from thence called Colchester oysters. The chief sort of other fish which they carry from this part of the shore to London are soles, which they take sometimes exceeding large, and yield a very good price at London market. Also sometimes middling turbot, with whiting, codling and large flounders. The small fish, as above, they sell in the country. In the several creeks and openings, as above, on this shore there are also other islands, but of no particular note, except Mercy, which lies in the middle of the two openings between Maldon Water and Colchester Water, being of the most difficult access, so that it is thought 1,000 men well provided might keep possession of it against a great force, whether by land or sea. On this account, and because if possessed by an enemy it would shut up all the navigation and fishery on that side, the government formerly built a fort on the southeast point of it, and generally in case of Dutch war, there is a strong body of troops kept there to defend it. At this place may be said to end what we call the hundreds of Essex, that is to say, the 300s or divisions which include the marshy country, viz. Barnstable Hundred, Rochford Hundred, and Dengie Hundred. I have one remark more, before I leave this damp part of the world, and which I cannot omit on the women's account, namely, that I took notice of a strange decay of the sex here, insomuch that all along this country it was very frequent to meet with men, that it had from 5 or 6 to 14 or 15 wives, nay, and some more. And I was informed, that in the marshes on the other side of the river over against Candy Island there was a farmer who was then living with the 25th wife, and that his son, who was but about 35 years old, had already had about 14. Indeed, this part of the story I only had by report, though from good hands too, but the other is well known and easy to be inquired into about Fobbing, Curringham, Thundersley, Benfleet, Prittlewell, Waker in Great Stambridge, Crixia, Burnham, Dengie, and other towns of the like situation. The reason, as a merry fellow told me, who said he had had about 12 of wives, though I found afterwards he fibbed a little, was this, that they being bred in the marshes themselves and seasoned to the place, did pretty well with it, but that they always went up into the hilly country, or, to speak their own language, into the uplands for a wife. That when they took the young lasses out of the wholesome and fresh air they were healthy, fresh, and clear, and well, But when they came out of their native air into the marshes among the fogs and damps, there they presently changed their complexion, got an agar too, and seldom held it above half a year, or a year at most. And then, said he, we go to the uplands again and fetch another, so that marrying of wives was reckoned a kind of good farm to them. It is true the fellow told this in a kind of drollery and mirth, but the fact, for all that, is certainly true, and that they have abundance of wives by that very means. Nor is it less true, that the inhabitants in these places do not hold it out, as in other countries, and as first you seldom meet with very ancient people among the poor, as in other places we do, so, take it one with another, not one half of the inhabitants are natives of the place, but such as from other countries or in other parts of this country settle here for the advantage of good farms. For which I appeal to any impartial inquiry, having myself examined into it critically in several places. From the marshes and low grounds being not able to travel without many windings and indentures by reason of the creeks and waters, I came up to the town of Malden, a noted market town situated at the conflux, or joining of two principal rivers in this county, the Chelmer and the Blackwater, and where they enter into the sea. The channel, as I have noted, is called by the sailors Malden Water, and is navigable up to the town, where by that means, is a great trade for carrying corn by water to London, the county of Essex being, especially on all that side, a great corn county. When I have said this, I think I have done Malden justice, and said all of it, that there is to be said, unless I should run into the old story of its antiquity, and tell you it was a Roman colony in the time of Vespasian, and that it was called Camulogenum. How the Britons, under Queen Boadicea, in revenge for the Romans' ill usage of her, for indeed they used her majesty ill, they stripped her naked, and whipped her publicly through their streets for some affront she had given them. I say how for this, she raised the Britons round the country, overpowered, and cut in pieces the 10th legion, killed above 80,000 Romans, and destroyed the colony. But was afterwards overthrown in a great battle, and 60,000 Britons slain. I say, unless I should enter into this story, I have nothing more to say of Malden, and, as for that story, it is so fully related by Mr. Camden in his History of the Romans in Britain at the beginning of his Britannia, that I need only refer the reader to it, and go on with my journey. Being obliged to come thus far into the uplands, as above, I made it my road to pass through Witham, a pleasant, well-situated market town, in which, and in its neighborhood, there are as many gentlemen of good fortunes and families as I believe, can be met with in so narrow a compass in any of the three counties, of which I make this circuit. In the town of Witham dwells the Lord Paisley, oldest son of the Earl of Abercorn of Ireland, a branch of the noble family of Hamilton, in Scotland. His lordship has a small, but a neat, well-built new house, and is finishing his gardens in such a manner as few in that part of England will exceed them. Near Chelmsford, hard by Boreham, lives the Lord Viscount Barrington, who, though not born to the title, or estate, or name which he now possesses, had the honor to be twice made heir to the estates of gentlemen, not at all related to him, at least, one of them, as is very much to his honor, mentioned in his patent of creation. His name was Shute, his father a linendraper in London, and served sheriff of the said city in very troublesome times. He changed the name of Shute for that of Barrington by an act of Parliament obtained for that purpose, and had the dignity of a baron of the kingdom conferred on him by the favor of King George. His lordship is a dissenter, and seems to love retirement. He was a member of Parliament for the town of Berwick-upon-Tweed. On the other side of Witham, at Fawburn, an ancient mansion house, built by the Romans, lives Mr. Bullock, whose father married the daughter of that eminent citizen, Sir Josiah Child, of Wanstead, by whom she had three sons. The eldest enjoys the estate, which is considerable. It is observable that in this part of the country there are several very considerable estates, purchased and now enjoyed by citizens of London, merchants, and tradesmen, as Mr. Western, an iron merchant, near Culloden, Mr. Cresner, a wholesale grocer, who was, a little before he died, named for Sheriff at Earl's Colne, Mr. Olimus, a merchant at Braintree, Mr. Westcombe, near Maldon, Sir Thomas Webster at Copthall, near Waltham, and several others. I mention this to observe how the present increase of wealth in the city of London spreads itself into the country, and plants families and fortunes, who in another age will equal the families of the ancient gentry, who perhaps were brought out. I shall take notice of this in a general head, and when I have run through all the counties, collect a list of the families of citizens and tradesmen thus established in the several counties, especially around London. The product of all this part of the country is corn, as that of the marshy feeding grounds mentioned above is grass, where their chief business is breeding of calves, which I need not say, are the best and fattest, and the largest veal in England, if not in the world. And, as an instance, I ate part of a veal or calf, fed by the late Sir Josiah Child at Wanstead, the loin of which weighed above 30 pounds, and the flesh exceeding white and fat. From hence I went on to Colchester. The story of Kildane, which is told of the town of Kelvedon, 3 miles from Witham, namely, that this is the place where the massacre of the Danes was begun by the women, and that therefore it was called Kildane. I say of it, as we generally say of improbable news, it wants confirmation. The true name of the town is Kelvedon, and has been so for many hundred years. Neither does Mr. Camden, or any other writer I meet with worth naming, insist on this piece of empty tradition. The town is commonly called Kelvedon. Colchester is an ancient corporation. The town is large, very populous, the streets fair and beautiful, and though it may not said to be finely built, yet there are abundance of very good and well-built houses in it. It still mourns in the ruins of a civil war, during which, or rather after the heat of the war was over, it suffered a severe siege, which, the garrison making a resolute defense, was turned into a blockade, in which the garrison and inhabitants also suffered the utmost extremity of hunger, and were at last obliged to surrender at discretion, when their two chief officers, Sir Charles Lucas and Sir George Lysall, were shot to death under the castle wall. The inhabitants had a tradition that no grass would grow upon the spot where the blood of those two gallant gentlemen was spilt, and they showed the place bare of grass for many years, but whether for this reason I will not affirm. The story is now dropped, and the grass, I suppose, grows there, as in other places. However, the battered walls, the breaches in the turrets, and the ruined churches, still remain, except that the Church of St. Mary, where they had the royal fort, is rebuilt, but the steeple, which was two-thirds battered down, because the besieged had a large culverin upon it that did much execution, remains still in that condition. There is another church which bears the marks of those times, namely, on the south side of the town, in the way to the Hythe, of which more hereafter. The lines of contravallation, with the forts built by the besiegers, and which surrounded the whole town, remain very visible in many places, but the chief of them are demolished. The River Colne, which passes through this town, compasses it on the north and east sides, and served in those times for a complete defense on those sides. They have 3 bridges over it, one called North Bridge, at the north gate, by which the road leads into Suffolk, one called East Bridge, at the foot of the High Street, over which lies the road to Harwich, and one at the Hythe, as above. The river is navigable within 3 miles of the town for ships of large burthen. A little lower it may receive even a royal navy, and up to that part called the Hythe, close to the houses, it is navigable for hoys and small barks. This Hythe is a long street, passing from west to east, on the south side of the town. At the west end of it, there is a small intermission of the buildings, but not much, And towards the river it is very populous. It may be called the Wapping of Colchester. There is one church in that part of the town, a large quay by the river, and a good custom house. The town may be said chiefly to subsist by the trade of making bays, which is known over most of the trading parts of Europe by the name of Colchester Bays, though indeed all the towns round carry on the same trade, namely, Kilvedon, Witham, Coggeshall, Braintree, Bocking, and Sea, and the whole county, large as it is, may be said to be employed, and in part maintained, by the spinning of wool for the bay trade of Colchester and its adjacent towns. The account of the siege, A.D. 1648, with a diary of the most remarkable passages, are as follows, which I had from so good a hand as that I have no reason to question its being a true relation. A diary, or, an account of the siege and blockade of Colchester, A.D. 1648. On the 4th of June, we were alarmed in the town of Colchester, that the Lord Goring, the Lord Capel, and a body of 2,000 of the loyal party, who had been in arms in Kent, having left a great body of an army in possession of Rochester Bridge, where they resolved to fight the Lord Fairfax and the Parliament army, had given the said General Fairfax the slip, and having passed the Thames at Greenwich, were come to Stratford, and were advancing this way. Upon which news, Sir Charles Lucas, Sir George Lysall, Colonel Cook, and several gentlemen of the loyal army, and all that had commissions from the king, with a gallant appearance of gentlemen volunteers, drew together from all parts of the country to join with them. The 8th, we were further informed that they were advanced to Chelmsford, to New Hall House, and to Witham, and the 9th some of the horse arrived in the town, taking possession of the gates, and having engineers with them, told us that General Goring had resolved to make this town his headquarters, and would cause it to be well fortified. They also caused the drums to beat for volunteers, and a good number of the poor bay weavers, and such like people, wanting employment, enlisted, so that they completed Sir Charles Lucas's regiment, which was but thin, to near 800 men. On the 10th we had news that the Lord Fairfax, having beaten the Royalists at Maidstone, and retaken Rochester, had passed the Thames at Gravesend, though with great difficulty, and with some loss, and was come to Horndon on the hill, in order to gain Colchester before the Royalists, but that hearing Sir Charles Lucas had prevented him, had ordered his rendezvous at Billericay, and intended to possess the pass at Maldon on the 11th, where Sir Thomas Honeywood, with the county trained bands, was to be the same day. The same evening the Lord Goring, with all his forces, making about 5,600 men, horse and foot, came to Colchester, and encamping without the suburbs, under command of the cannon of St. Mary's Fort, made disposition to fight the Parliament forces, if they came up. The 12th, the Lord Goring came into Colchester, viewed the fort in St. Mary's churchyard, ordered more cannon to be planted upon it, posted two regiments in the suburbs without the head gate, let the town know he would take them into His Majesty's protection, and Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.